It was like having rocket fuel poured into my face. I suddenly felt that I belonged, that my work was good enough to be appreciated. It was such a big deal.
If you've ever felt uncomfortable about showing your face on video, you are definitely not alone. So imagine how you might feel about putting your face on camera if you'd had years of complete strangers making comments about your face.
I would be walking down the street and a complete stranger would point and stare and say to the children, "Oh, look at that woman." There was one guy who asked me if I was married. And when I said I was, he said, "Thank God, because most men wouldn't touch a woman who looks like you."
Textiles artist Kath James has Bell's palsy, a condition that can cause weakness in the facial muscles that can lead to facial drooping. Until a year ago, Kath had shied away from showing her face on camera. So what inspired her to do daily Facebook Lives during lockdown? A decision that helped take her Instagram following from 300 to more than 4,000 and get approached by a prestigious industry publication that wanted to feature her work. That's exactly what you'll find out in this interview.
I developed such a weird idea that Instagram was full of perfect looking women and they're all influencers. It genuinely felt like it wasn't the place for somebody who looked like me. I'm not such a fish out of water after all.
You'll also get tons of tips on how to create engaging video content, both live and recorded, and how to stop feeling afraid of showing your face on camera. Plus tips on how to grow your following on Instagram. While Kath mainly focuses on Instagram in this episode, the tips she shares can be applied to any platform. They're just really good content principles. You're listening to the Courageous Content Podcast. I'm Janet Murray, and I love helping coaches, creatives, and entrepreneurs create super engaging content that generates leads and sales for their businesses. No one starts a business and just knows how to create engaging content. It's a skill that has to be learnt and practiced. And there's always something new to learn, no matter how long you've been in business. And I know running an online business can feel messy. Perfectionism, fear, self-doubt, and other mindset stuff can stop you showing up online in the way that's best for you. So you'll get help with that too. Ready to get courageous with your content? Let's get started. So, Kath, you make hand-embroidered anatomical illustrations. Tell us more.
I hand-embroider human biology, human anatomy, and fun phrases. But my specialism is human anatomy, and I sell those embroidery hoops to medical professionals and amateur anatomists all over the world. So it's quite a niche art form in the embroidery world and in the medical illustration world. But it's really fun and interesting, and I think it's growing in popularity too, which helps.
And what on earth got you into it?
I suffer from Bell's palsy, which is a facial paralysis, and I was having surgery. I had a whole slew of surgeries on it 6 or 7 years ago, and after one surgery I was extremely bored in hospital. There was a really long recovery time, and I just felt the urge to hand sew, and I'd already had a little bit of sewing experience. And because I was so familiar at that point with seeing images of the inside of my face, it kind of struck me that the fibers of the muscles were very much like straight stitches. And so I started just noodling around like that. My first piece was of the muscles of the face, and my consultant surgeon saw it, immediately offered to buy it off me, and I kind of knew I was onto something, and it's grown from there.
And it's a classic case of your niche finding you.
Yeah, absolutely. I could never find a subject matter that engaged me enough that I would actually start it. Embroidery is often full of things like florals and houseplants and quite calming scenes, and they just didn't float my boat. So getting into the human body was what excited me and got me started.
And until lockdown, you hadn't really done much in the way of video.
No, I had done one live with your Christmas market, which I think was at the end of 2019. And then COVID hit, of course, in March. And it was chaos for a lot of businesses. And there was one particular business, Julie Davis Flower Workshops, who started talking live every day to her followers. And it was so engaging and comforting to see her there. And I thought my customers would like me to do that too. I started doing it, and I was really scared of doing it. But I would never have done it without doing your Christmas market first. And I just thought, I need to put my face out there. And it worked a treat. And I think I did a live every weekday for something like 10 or 12 weeks. And that really got me into the habit of showing my face. But weirdly, I felt really safe doing it on Facebook in a way that I didn't feel safe doing it on Instagram. And it took me a lot longer to get to the point where I would actually put my face on Instagram.
So we'll dig into that in just a second. I think I probably ought to fill you in about the Christmas market. For the past however many years, I've been doing a Christmas market for mainly product-based business owners. And the idea behind it came from this idea that lots of small business owners are scared about getting on camera. So if I was to host the show and look after the tech, I could invite my clients to come on, sell their products, 5-minute spot, really safe. I ask the questions. It's very much like QVC type thing. And it became a bit of a thing. And when you first start doing video, having something where someone can almost hold your hand or having some structure around it, I think that's what worked about the Christmas market, wasn't it?
I loved that you took care of all the tech. I loved how thorough you were, that we did like a little run through the day before and it took all the fear out of it. And that made a really big difference to me getting out on Facebook in the March then when COVID struck.
I'm going to take us off track, but there is something I want to talk about here actually, which I think is really relevant. And when you said there, what was great about it was you took care of the tech. I didn't have to worry. I think the thing about tech is that a lot of people say that the reason they're afraid of doing video is tech. But actually, I don't think it's the know-how. It's more about those kind of sensible things like testing it beforehand, having a rehearsal, because people say that they're afraid of video, but actually one of the big things you have to do is not be scared of the tech, but take it seriously and understand that if you're going to go live, you need to practice. You need to test the equipment. You need to take it seriously. Like if you find a location that's good, the internet access works well, don't move location. Don't suddenly change your microphone or don't suddenly just decide to go and broadcast from your mum's. All of those things add extra stress to you. And actually, the tech for me, it's not so much about the tech itself. It's just the practice of it. It's just running through it. And the more you do it, the easier it gets. So that's my little, what do you call it? Like a little lecture, I think.
Yes, well, you could certainly tell you used to be a teacher, Janet. That's very good. We all need to be taught. So thank you.
So anyway, sorry for just interrupting that with that little lecture. So back over to Kath, who it's really all about. So before lockdown, you hadn't done much live. You'd done the Christmas market with me. Yeah. So what was it that was holding you back?
It was my face. Like I say, I've got Bell's palsy, which means I'm completely paralysed on the left side of my face. And it makes me, I call it wonky. It makes me look wonky. It looks like I've had a stroke. So the left side of my face droops quite a bit. I've had a lot of surgery to help rectify it. And while it's helped, there's still a significant droop there. And the weird thing is that when this struck, how I looked didn't necessarily bother me. And it only became an issue with the reactions of everybody around me. So I don't mean my friends and family, even though they were concerned, obviously. I mean from complete strangers. So I would routinely be walking down the street and a complete stranger would literally point and stare and say to the children, oh, look at that woman. Or I remember one occasion walking into a petrol station, the attendant on the other side of the room shouted, oh my God, were you born that way? I'm laughing, but it's not funny, really. There was one guy who stopped me when I was out walking one day and asked me if I was married. And when I said I was, he said, thank God, because most men wouldn't touch a woman who looks like you. Oh. And when you get this a lot, it really wears you down, of course. And I got to a point where, even though I loved walking, I would only walk on really quiet trails where I thought nobody would see me. I was subconsciously changing my life to suit what people thought about how I looked. And I got to a point of thinking, well, my face just shouldn't be out there on the internet. I'll do all my other things. I'll create all my other content. I'll do all any memes and show my embroidery, but my face just shouldn't go out there. And then I got to a point where I thought, that's just holding everything back. It's a hump I have to get over. And that's where your Christmas market helped. That was the first time I'd ever put my face out in relation to my business. Oh, luckily, wow. Things started to change.
And how did you feel that first time that you went live? And first of all, I'm just so sorry and shocked all of that has happened to you and those things have been said to you. And I just can't begin to imagine how it would then feel to go, oh, I'm going to go live on Facebook. But what was going through your head when you were going live for the first time?
I was absolutely bricking it, she says, trying not to swear. My gut reaction was, I'm immediately going to get loads of people commenting, saying, get off the internet, you're really ugly, go and die. And for some reason, there was like this bloody mindedness inside of me that thought, no, I need to do this for my business. And I was sick of seeing other people with businesses like mine just getting out there and doing it. It was one of those moments where, to coin a cliche, I felt the fear and I just did it anyway. Mm-hmm. And I'd kind of steeled myself in terms of, okay, if I get these comments, what am I going to do? How am I going to react? And nothing like that happened. Absolutely nothing. The response was just amazing. I've now been putting my face out on Instagram for a year and I've never had a single bad comment about the way I look. So I'm really shocked at the difference between what was in my head and the reality of it.
What did you talk about on that first live?
I think the first live on Facebook, it was all about COVID. And I was saying to my customers, look, we don't know what's going to happen. We're all really scared. We've got a great community here at Kraken Creations on Facebook. So let's all shivvy each other along and cheer each other up. And that was it. It was about not letting my customers down and not abandoning them. And partly I wanted to know they were still out there anyway. On the first live, I had perhaps 15 people watching it. And that was quite good because I started small. Even though we never got into three-figure numbers, it just gave me enough confidence to do another one and then another one. And it rolled from there.
Did you have any concerns about the tech side of things?
Yes, I did. And what's really interesting is when I did my first live, oh my word, the things that went through my head. What if the house burns down when I'm live? What if my phone runs out of juice? What if the lighting's terrible? What if the cat comes into the room? I was just a bag of nerves. And the weird thing is that every day I did it, my confidence built to the point that when something did happen, it would be absolutely fine. For example, my phone would start dying. So I'd simply take it off the stand and talk to my customers as I went to find the lead to plug it in. And these little glitches, I just started getting over. I just suddenly realized I was better and stronger than the fears I had. And nothing could happen that I couldn't fix. And after all, I was only talking about embroidery. I wasn't replacing a baby's kidney or anything. The world wasn't going to end. And that's how I got through it.
That really is the only way. And the only way to get comfortable with, you know, like you said about making a mistake or your phone falling off the stand.
Yes.
And you do it and those things happen to you and you cope. Yes. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, that happened. I coped. And that helps you build the resilience for the next thing that happens.
Yes. It certainly did for me because they could see in me a part of them when they clamber around with phones and run out of juice. And it kind of made me more human in a way. And I think they like that.
And we all love those clips, don't we? There's that like famous one where that guy's doing a broadcast from home and then his kid comes in on a scooter or something. And there's loads of clips like that, isn't there?
Yes.
But they carry on, don't they? And they just carry on with the broadcast, or if something falls or something happens or there's an explosion behind them or whatever, they just carry on, or they move or they just do whatever. And that's the other part of it as well. It's live. And I actually found that live video helped me get better at recorded video. The more live video I did, the better I got at pre-recorded because I was better at getting it right first time and not having to do 52 takes. But also, I wasn't such a perfectionist because I was like, well, you know, that went out and it was live and people still liked it. In fact, they liked it when my microphone stand felt down or whatever it was.
Absolutely. I find when I'm, say, for example, doing reels, the reel I've decided to do, I may do say 5 or 6 takes and most of them will end up in a swear word and I've dropped something. But those things never happen on lives. And I think it's because I'm switched on a live to the point that I'm just ready for those things happening. And, you know, if John Simpson can keep reporting when Baghdad is blowing up behind him, then I can keep talking about embroidery.
Yeah. And also, I think there's a sense that we take ourselves a bit seriously. I'm thinking of when I was a journalist, and I know, Kathy, you were a journalist too.
Yeah.
I was freelance and worked from home. And when I first started, I had this thing where I didn't want people to know almost that I was a freelancer working from home. I was interviewing Will Self. Of all, who was like the grumpiest on TV, the grumpiest. If you don't know him, if you're not from the UK, he's grumpiest. I think he's a comedian. Is he a comedian? I don't know.
No, he's just a writer, I think.
He's just a writer. Yeah, like I say, he's a comedian. It wasn't very funny if he was. He was a writer, wasn't he? Yeah. I was interviewing him about, I can't even remember what it was. And my daughter was about 3 at the time, and she managed to pull the telly off the wall in our bedroom while I was interviewing Will Self. And I just had to say, I'm sorry, Will, I've got to go. My daughter's just, I think she's pulled the telly off the wall.
Oh.
And he was as lovely and so nice about it. He was like, oh, God, it's awful when you work at home for kids. Because he did it as well. He was working at home. He was a freelance writer working at home as well. And I think that was a turning point for me. Like, I don't have to pretend to be professional. I can actually say to, I've interviewed loads of MPs and ministers and who've said, oh, sorry, my child's, you can tell what kind of MP this was, but my child's just come in the room and is having a look at my father's war medals. But you're sort of like, I think a lot of us, we're trying to, I don't know, we're trying to fake it, aren't we? And we're trying to,
yes.
And actually,
I think you're right.
When we're more human and vulnerable people, it's more relatable, isn't it?
Yes, I think I've noticed this. As an aside, my husband's got a very corporate job. And of course, in the COVID era, everyone's working from home. And he said in all of his meetings, the best moments are always when somebody's child comes in or the cat walks across the screen. And he says it always kind of breaks the ice because suddenly everyone remembers they're all human. They're all, yeah. It's all going to be okay. Nothing terrible is going to happen.
Definitely. And you said that Instagram was different than Facebook. Can you talk about that?
I'm entirely blaming Kim Kardashian. It's entirely her fault, her and her bum. I think I developed such a weird idea that Instagram was full of perfect looking women and they're all influencers and they've all got perfect lifestyles. It genuinely felt like it wasn't the place for somebody who looked like me. And I was that scared of it. It was a big enough deal going on Instagram anyway, because I struggle with learning new interfaces and new apps. And your nudging made me think, come on, Jamesy, just do it. Just get on Instagram. And then, of course, you get on Instagram. And I started looking for fellow illustrators. And you just start seeing these faces popping up that don't look like they're on the cover of Vogue. They look like normal people. Seeing those people doing reels and putting their faces out there made me think, well, I'm not such a fish out of water after all. It's nice to see that Instagram is mainly populated with people you would just bump into at the bus stop.
Yeah, in particular with Instagram, these beautiful photos of people's houses and people on the beach, and it can sometimes feel a bit intimidating, can't it?
Yes.
But actually, I think there are many real people on the platform as well, people who are prepared to show us the real.
Absolutely. One of the things I try to do on my Instagram account is give everyone blow-by-blow details of what I do. So I will show them when my shed looks a mess or when there's an embroidery hoop that's halfway through and has gone wrong, or I'll show them the ridiculous clothes I'm wearing because nobody can see me. And I keep trying to do that. It's almost like I want to make other people feel comfortable with being on Instagram in the way that I've become comfortable on there.
I want to share something with you that's a little bit vulnerable here. And it's the kind of thing that could come out all wrong. It feels a bit scary to say it out loud. When I first thought of approaching Kath to do this interview, I was kind of in two minds. Now, I've known Kath personally for many years, so I think she will know what I'm trying to say here, and it will probably make her smile. But much as I admire Kath for her bravery in showing up on camera in spite of her health challenges, I didn't want the takeaway from this episode to be, well, if Kath can show up on camera with, in her words, a wonky face, then anyone can. Because I know that there are many other reasons, aside from physical appearance, that can make someone feel terrified of showing up on camera. Anxiety and depression, for starters. And the last thing I'd want is for this interview to make anyone feel guilty because they're afraid of showing up on camera, even though their face is perfectly normal, as it were. To make someone feel worse about being afraid of showing up on camera than they already do. And knowing Kath as I do, I don't think she'd want that either. For me, this interview is about inspiring you to be brave and to move out of your comfort zone with your content in a way and at a pace that feels comfortable for you. Yeah, it's really, really inspiring. I'm guessing you didn't just jump on there and your reels did amazingly straight away and you totally got it. Can you talk a little bit about how you got to understand what your ideal customers or clients needed to see from you?
Oh my word, that is a work in progress. I still post reels that absolutely bomb. And when I first started posting reels, I was so scared of doing it that I was covering topics, I guess, from my point of view rather than from the point of view of my customer, because that was kind of my comfort zone. But I've been learning slowly sometimes that the reels need to be about the people who are watching them more than about me. So while I'm showing off my work, I'm showing off my work, I'm still talking about me, but it, you know, essentially I'm making them see themselves in me. So I'm always constantly trying to work towards that. And it's quite hard. I do keep falling back into what I want to talk about, constant nudging myself to not do that.
I think that's what it's all about though, isn't it? That can be the light bulb moment for most people when you realize, actually, oh, my content isn't about me. It's about my audience. But actually, sometimes your audience want to hear you talk about you or show your products. It's about you just understanding what it is that they want. And are there any posts that you've done that have done really well?
Some of my reels have done really well. The reels where I give blow-by-blow accounts of how I will, say, stitch an eyeball or a lung. The embroidery world is kind of desperate to know all of this stuff, which is great. So they're my most popular ones. I think my work stands out so much. When people see it, they just stop everything they're doing and look at it.
Yeah. With creators and artists, people just love seeing the process, don't they? They love seeing how you create. They love seeing your workshop. You've got your sewing shed at the end of your garden. People love to see your environment behind the scenes. So you mentioned there that your best performing reels are the ones where you show the process.
Yeah.
Behind what you do. So I can almost guess what some listeners are thinking now. Well, if you share your secrets, if you show how you create your amazing creations, will other people not copy you? For those people who are, say, coaches, they're often terrified that if they share their best tips, then people won't want to buy their coaching. So it's the same whether you're a product or service-based business. Do you ever worry about that?
I never, ever worry about that. My God, this might sound quite arrogant. My work is so detailed and intricate. My biggest pieces are 10 inches across, which isn't very big, but they can take up to 100 hours of work. So I think if somebody can guess from what I'm showing them how to do that, then they're welcome to it. If they want to attempt to do 100 hours of work on the renal system, they can try it. And I think what I do stands out so much, and I've not seen anything else like it in terms of embroidery. I'd be quite impressed to see somebody else do it. Oh, I'm sorry if that sounds arrogant. I don't mean it to at all.
It doesn't at all. And I think it's like anything where people worry about copying. So I'll have, like, for example, coaches, and they'll say, but if I give this tip away, then people won't want to buy my online program or they won't want to coach with me. And I'm like, well, actually, it's the opposite, because people will be like, well, brilliant. If I can get this much value out of that one tip and I can go and implement what they shared with me, what must they have up their sleeves that they're not sharing on Instagram? And wouldn't it be amazing just to get that opportunity to talk to them more?
I think, weirdly, it would be a false economy to not show them those things, because my embroideries can be quite expensive. There's some I sell, a 9-inch hoop of a really complex piece of anatomy can be, say, £500. And people aren't going to spend that money until they understand the amount of work that's gone into it. So by showing them that I'm stitching something with one strand that's just 3 millimeters long, that's taken several hours, they start to see the value in it. If I kept that information to myself, they think, oh, well, I can just get a print of that instead, or I could just try it. So you have to put that information out there. And I think it comes back to you then.
Also, what you're doing is you're tackling objections, aren't you? Because that person who says, oh, I don't understand why it's so expensive. Well,
yes,
you can send them to that video and say, well, look, I understand why you might feel that if you don't know what goes into creating it, but have a look at this video.
Yes, absolutely.
This leads me nicely into another question I wanted to ask, and that's about sales. So sometimes people will say, well, I don't get the point of reels, fanning around on Instagram reels. Like, how is that going to help my business? How is it going to lead to sales? So can you talk about how your content leads to sales?
Oh, my giddy aunt. Now, I've got a terrible confession to make, which is I'm not very good with my insights and analysing all the details. I think reels are almost an extension, in a way, of my creativity. I think that I'm doing reels in the first place and hopefully making them really fun and interesting makes people see that I'm actually creative. And I think giving insights into how I stitch things always gets me DMs from people who say, I've just found your work, because my reels get shared quite a bit sometimes. I just found your work, I'm going to follow you. sometimes people need several touch points before they make a purchase. And I think reels are often for me the first touch point where those people will stick with me, and it might take several months for them to come to me and say, can I now have a hoop of my own? So how they directly lead to sales, I'm not entirely sure, but I'm pretty sure they do. Otherwise, I just wouldn't keep doing them.
You just nailed it there. And you said people send me DMs and they say, can I buy this off you? You also mentioned something else that's really important. You mentioned shares. If you're creating content that is interesting and engaging enough that somebody will hit the share button and send it to a friend, then you're growing your audience and you're also growing your potential to sell more stuff. When people are playing it safe with content and they're saying, oh, I don't want to get on video and I'm worried about what my neighbor thinks or what the people in my old corporate job will think, that's what you're missing out on. And when people are being safe with their content as well, and when they're just like, oh, I'll just do this. I know it's not going to set the world on fire, but at least I'm putting something out there. But actually, when you're brave enough to create really engaging content that makes people hit the share button, that is different entirely, isn't it?
I've got no doubt there are people out there thinking, oh, geez, isn't she a bit old to be doing that? And weirdly, I've just done a reel, which I haven't shared yet, where I make a joke of the fact that I'm 50 and doing reels, and that's okay. And it's almost like getting out ahead of the haters, as it were, and doing it in such a way and with such fun that whatever anyone says, that doesn't trump the amount of fun you're having. And that, for me, is key. Even if somebody came to me now and said, you need to stop doing these reels, you look like a fool, I'm having such a good time doing them that it just wouldn't stop me. So I think once you've found the joy in it, that sounds awfully, kitschy, but once you've found the joy in it, I think that supersedes any opinion anyone has.
But I also think you've hit on something else that's important there. It's about your values. I did an episode with Rachel, who has a toy business and she sells wooden toys online. I'll link to it in the show notes. And that was one of the things that really came out of our conversation. She was selling these wooden toys online. And actually, it was about her deep-held belief that we shouldn't be buying cheap rubbish. We should be investing in nice toys that children can play with and that their children can play with and can be passed down the generations, and also that are better for the environment. I think that's, people buy from people, and they also buy from people whose values that they align with, because I'm the same. I'm nearly 50, I'm on reels, and actually that's fine. And anyone who criticizes me for it, well, they're not my people. That kind of thing is either going to draw people to you or it's going to turn them away, which is fine, isn't it?
Yes, of course it is. Of course it is. I accept there'll be people out there who don't like me, and that's absolutely fine, because there are enough people who do like me, and that's all the people I need. I don't need to win the world over. There's enough for everyone. So yeah, as long as I've got my community enjoying what I'm doing and that community is growing and engaging, well, I don't know what more I could want, really, well, apart from winning the lottery.
And where do you get your ideas from?
Oh, my giddy aunt, the internet. But by that, the Instagram, you, of course, I'm always looking at what you're up to. There are a couple of smaller accounts who seem to kind of really engage me, and I look at what they're up to. I've got this little habit where I'll see a reel somebody has made that I like, and I click on the audio, and then I click on the accounts of all the people who've used that audio to see how they've interpreted it. And think, God, how could that be turned to suit my business? I try to capitalize on those days where I'm so clear-headed that the ideas come thick and fast. And I just stop everything and I get all the ideas down, because I know that'll keep me going on the weeks where I just haven't got a clue what I'm doing.
What do you do when a post does bomb? Because that still happens to me sometimes. Oh. It might be relatively, my post bombing might be what somebody else would consider good, but that's the thing about it. It's more about comparing to what you normally do. Like, what do you do when a post does bomb? And can you give us an example?
Lately, I think some of the pics on my grid aren't getting as much engagement as usual. And I'm in the process of trying to work out why. And that does make me a little bit kind of downhearted. But I also know from experience that you have to feel downhearted and then go and put another post out anyway. And I don't mean to make up for it, but as you say, just keep showing up. And it's interesting, when I'm right in the middle of it and a post has bombed and I'm sitting there thinking, nobody loves me, it's weird, a few days later something will happen which will be a result of something I posted back when I thought there was no point in trying, but I'm going to do it anyway. And it's like I try to cling to these little shards of light, and I try to remind myself, okay, it bombed today, But that last post meant that this person followed me and they shared me with somebody who shared me with somebody else. And I tried to retain the big picture in my head. And it's not that I don't get downhearted. I just try to overcome that downheartedness faster rather than wallowing in it.
And it's all learning as well, isn't it? So I just look at something and say, okay, well, why? Like, is it that my video, maybe it was a little bit long, or maybe I didn't quite get to the point quick enough? I always look at the content. I don't look at things like time. There's usually something I can see and I think, well, next time I won't do that, or I will do that. Or just sometimes that isn't right for your audience. And I put out a post recently where I was talking about why I don't give away the name of the printer that prints my planner. And that's done really well. And I've done a few other more opinion-based posts that have done really well. And this is the thing, is that I post things on Instagram Reels, which do brilliantly, which bomb on TikTok. Fun thing is where I dress up and do silly things on Instagram. TikTok, no, they want to hear my opinion. They want to see me on camera. And I think that's the other thing as well, is that you have to respond to what's happening. And when I was just like, do you know what? I'm just going to talk about this thing which gets on my nerves and why it gets on my nerves and actually my very, very valid reasons for not sharing it. And people could relate to it and it stands out from other content that's out there. It's just about experimenting, testing, going back. And often when you're feeling the most despondent and thinking, oh, you know, I'm really not cracking it here, that's when you'll get that post.
Yes. I find that quite a lot. I get to a point where I think, oh, sod this, it's not working. I want to give up. I'm going to burn down the shed. And then something wonderful will happen that makes me just want to carry on forever. So it's like clinging on to a roller coaster sometimes.
You've talked about sales. So you've obviously seen more sales coming your way. Can you talk about some of the other great things that have come out of you showing up consistently, but also putting your face on video?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my word. I'm going to use the phrase life-changing. I said earlier that in embroidery terms, I really stand out. I really am an oddball. And in medical illustration terms, I really stand out. And recently, because of my content on Instagram, I got to know a fellow medical illustrator. She's the editor of the Journal of Visual Communication in Medicine, which is the journal of the Institute of Medical Illustrators. She asked to feature my work in it. And it was just this light bulb moment where I thought, not only is my work being appreciated by people who really know their way around the human body, because I've got no formal training whatsoever, but I'm actually seen as belonging to that group of people. It was like having rocket fuel poured into my face. I suddenly felt that I belonged, that my work was good enough to be appreciated. It was such a big deal. It was a really pivotal moment. And it wasn't long after I pivoted my business a little, because I used to do other kinds of sewing as well. And towards the end of lockdown, I thought, I just want to do what I love, and that's anatomical embroidery. So it was that recognition, I guess. And it's just been rocket fuel for my confidence and for what I want for the business.
And you've added, was it 4,000 followers on Instagram?
Yes. Yeah. When I started really getting properly active on Instagram, I had about 300 followers. So that was March 2020. And as of today, I've got 4,444 followers. I like the roundness of the number. So yeah, it's grown. And what's nice is it grows so consistently, not rapidly, but consistently. I'd also got to a point where I was really fed up with Facebook, in that it just didn't seem to suit me. My customers enjoyed it, but it just didn't suit what I was putting out there. And Instagram has almost been that planets lining up moment where my customers like what I'm putting out there and I like what I'm putting out there, and we're all engaging with it. And it just feels so smooth. Hopefully it'll keep growing. I'll keep engaging.
Do you have a kind of strategy for how you use the Instagram grid, stories, reels, or is your approach quite fluid towards it?
I've created this kind of idea of what I want it to look like. And I've been working on that. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I'm still trying to get the hang of getting the images right so that they look good on the grid. So that's all a bit of a, you know, work in progress at the moment. In terms of the content, I have totally got a schedule. I sit down on the last day of every month to create a schedule for the next month, because I found that working in 3-month phases just didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. So every month I sit down and I create a list of the posts I want to do. So I'm doing roughly 4 posts a week. And in between those days, I've got ideas for my stories as well. So whenever somebody comes on to my Instagram account, there's always something new to look at. And that's what I love about stories. It takes the pressure off almost, having this perfect grid. I put all sorts of stuff on stories. I did an unboxing this morning. I show people what socks I'm wearing. I'll ask them what cup of tea they're having. I'll show them how much is raining outside the shed. But it's all those kind of little glimpses, and I think they really add to it. And I almost enjoy doing stories more than I enjoy doing the grid, because the grid feels that much more like a shop window, where stories is more like the party in the back. I used to try doing the 3 months in advance thing, and it would just reduce me to tears. So the first month would be really sharp and exciting. And the second month would be like, yeah, it's okay. And the third month, I'd literally just be stabbing the paper. I hated it. And I think I come to realize that if I want my content to be fresh and engaging and inviting, then I have to feel those things when I'm writing it. Mm. And if I'm trying to guess what I'm going to be feeling and thinking 3 months from now, then I can't do that. So I would rather just cut out a day a month and think, okay, what have I seen in this last week that's excited me? And what would I like to reproduce on my grid? And I think you need to kind of keep that freshness, really. So logically, yes, it's nice to have like a year worth of posts waiting. But as you say, the world changes so fast. And especially on something like Instagram, I know I keep coming back to that, but trends pop up so quickly and move so fast. And it's great to have the time and space to kind of catch hold of that trend and just go with it and not slavishly follow the plan that you laid out back in July.
If someone's listening to this and saying, okay, you've convinced me, Kath, about the video, what would you recommend somebody does if they're like, I'm terrified of video, but I've listened to Kath and now I'm like, I'm going to go for it. What would your recommended next steps be?
Oh, let me think. I think something you said earlier strikes me as really good advice that nobody wants to hear, which is just do it. And by that, I don't mean switch on your phone now and start talking when you've got tears streaming down your face and the kids screaming. You know, have some preparation, practice in the mirror a little bit, press your phone out and work on some angles. Where's the light coming in? So you've got as much security as you can have almost before you go live. And then just go easy on yourself. Say to yourself, okay, what's the worst that can happen? House burns down, I switch off my phone and run. And nobody's going to die, are they? Nothing terrible is going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think in terms of my own experience, nobody could say anything as awful to me as the things I said to myself in my own head. And I think once I realized that, I thought, well, there's nothing worse I can hear. And it just helped me release all those fears and just go for it. And like I say, be kind to yourself, accept you're going to make mistakes, embrace them, turn them into content if you have to. Get a screen grab of you scrabbling around for your phone leads and use that in a story, and people will just warm to it.
There is so much amazing advice in this episode about getting comfortable with sharing your face on camera and how being brave enough to do so can help you form a deeper connection with your community, which is, after all, what it's all about. And that's what's going to help you to attract your ideal customers or clients and to make more sales in your business. I really hope this interview will inspire you to do something courageous with your content, whether that's showing up on video or something else entirely. If you enjoyed this episode, please get in touch with myself and Kath on Instagram. Kath's over at Kraken Creations. I'll add her website and all her contact details in the show notes. And I'm over on at Jan Murray UK. We would love to hear from you. Would you like to create super engaging content about your business and do it consistently? If so, you need my Courageous Content Planner in your life. It's a gorgeous A4 desk diary that's so simple to use because it's based on my 4x4 strategy, which involves posting 4 styles of content 4 days a week. Yes, content planning really can be that easy. There's templates for daily, weekly, monthly, and annual planning, so you know exactly what to post, where, and when. Plus hundreds of ready-to-go content ideas and prompts. So you'll never run out of ideas for social media posts again. And accountability trackers to keep you consistent with your posting. The Courageous Content Planner is both practical and pretty, with 4 gorgeous cover designs to choose from. So if you want to ditch the content overwhelm and you want a simple content plan you can actually stick to, head over to CourageousContentPlanner.com to order your copy today. Thanks for listening to the Courageous Content Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or share the episode on social media. That way, more people can benefit from the free tips and strategies I share. And be sure to tag me in when you do. I'm at Jan Murray on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok.